live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Alex Elbrook.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
It's time to talk to my guest, Susan Grossi. Hello to you. Lovely to see you again.
Well, thank you for inviting me again.
Now, we saw you, we were just talking about it, we saw you kind of last August.
That's
so
right, yes.
Just over a year, not much different from a year. And you just produced your first book in this series.
That's right, yes.
And you're bringing out your second, which is very impressive. For those that don't know, can you give us a bit of background of the whole series?
Yes, yes, of course. So I'm working on a series of five novels set in Cambridge in the 1820s, which I find a fascinating decade for all sorts of reasons. And I decided from the outset there'd be five books in the series. And the first one, as Alex said, came out last year. That was called Ostler, and that was set in 1825 when the university first set up its group of constables, who I thought were a very interesting group of people. And I decided to make one of them my narrator. And this second book, Sizar, is 1826, narrated by the same constable. So we're going to move through the years with him as he grows in expertise.
So I'm glad you pronounced it properly, because I haven't been pronouncing it properly. But it's Sizar. And what exactly is Sizar then?
Well, I made a mistake. When I first started writing this, I thought everyone at Cambridge as a student was an undergraduate. I thought they were all the same. But actually, there were huge gradations in types of undergraduate in Cambridge in the 1820s and indeed most of the 19th century. And you had the nobleman who didn't have to do any work at all and just came up for 6 years and drank a lot. Six terms.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I was thinking, well, they really are getting away with it.
They didn't have to do the 9 terms. They didn't have to do exams. They just had to be here. So they were at the top of the tree, and right down at the bottom of the tree were the charity boys. Now, this was good in one way, because of course it meant that clever poor boys got a chance at an education. But on the other hand, if you came up as a sizar, you were often quite young. You could come up at about 15, and you had to perform tasks in order to earn your keep. And although in centuries gone by they were much more onerous, by the time of the 1820s they were still having to do things like wait at table and polish people's shoes and fetch
and
carry.
Which is quite demeaning if you were supposed to be like on the same level.
Exactly.
It's like
that.
We're equal, but we're not actually equal.
Not actually. You had to wear a different gown.
Oh.
And so you were instantly recognisable in the street. In college you ate after everyone else, so you had to wait at table and then have your dinner afterwards. At least you didn't have to just eat the scraps, which is how it was before.
Yeah.
But still, yes, enormous social differences that everyone knew about. And of course, these boys, some of them were much, much brighter than the undergraduates they were serving. And so there was a lot of opportunity for discontent, for abuse. And so I decided to take that idea and run with it for this book.
So your books are, so you do a lot of research on the time, but then they're kind of fictional, but based on how, you know, the real research, which is quite nice, because you know that these things would happen potentially.
Yes, indeed, indeed. My books are always a mixture of real and imagined. So some of the characters are real. So the vice chancellor of the university, the local coroner, all of these are real people. And on them, I add fictionalised characters, but always based on true professions, if you will. So there were ostlers, there were university constables. So it's based on those. And I pin the two together because I like that sort of the certainty of the real research, and I'm meticulous about that, and I enjoy it. I mean, I don't pretend it's a hardship at all. I love sitting in the library looking at arcane bits of university history. But then I add these fictional stories around it to I hope, enliven it and humanise it.
Yeah, and when you're saying about doing the research, so where do you go for the research? Is it just here, or do you have to go to other places?
Well, I spend a lot of time in the university library in their rare books room and their university archives. I go to the Cambridgeshire Collection at the Central Library, and the women who run that are fantastic. And I look at old newspapers. The Cambridge Chronicle, for instance, is a great source of information. And people are remarkably helpful. So in the first book, in Ostler, I knew I wanted a character to travel from Cambridge to King's Lynn. And in those days, you did it via, if you can believe this, Alex, paddle steamer.
Oh,
paddle steamer on the cam. And I thought, that
wow,
can't be right. I was picturing like a big Mississippi paddle steamer.
Yeah.
And so I got in touch with, of course, the Paddle Steamer Appreciation Society. And I asked them about it. And they were so helpful. They sent information and diagrams and documents and all sorts. And if you ask people for help on their subject of expertise, they are tremendously helpful. So I do a lot of that. I go straight to the source and say, you're the expert on daggers or poisons or paddle steamers. Please tell me what you know. And that's where it comes
from. paddle steamers. Who would have thought it? I mean, that's amazing.
It's madness.
You'd have thought it'd just be like horse and cart or something, wouldn't you?
And apparently the paddle steamer that was used was a very slim one with one small wheel at the back, not the two huge wheels at the side. The can was far too narrow and shallow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it was like a very slim creature going up the river. And these things were built out of kits. So there were kits made in Sheffield and sent over. And there you go. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I bet you... Yeah, I think just finding out these things is just such hidden treasures, isn't it, really?
It's an absolute joy.
Yeah, yeah, and you're putting all this into the books as well. So really, you're doing all that hard work for us, and then people can enjoy all the information and of course, the story.
Well, I hope that what it does is it makes people feel secure that what they're reading is accurate.
Yeah.
That's what I aim for. I don't want to put everything in the books because there's too much. I say, it's not a hardship to find it, but I try and put just sort of drip feed it in and hope that people feel secure in what they're reading.
Well, that's it. That you're not really reading it for a history lesson. You're reading it to get, like you say, to feel that this hasn't just been made up out of the air.
Exactly.
Because if you heard that and you put in about a paddle steamer, people would think, that's ridiculous, as you thought, till you do the research, and then you know that that's going to be okay. Yeah. Now, for this book, you've got a launch on the 5th of December.
I have. It's very exciting. Although it's my 9th novel, it's the first launch party I've ever had, and it's all down to the very kind people who run the new crime bookshop on Botolph Lane, Bodies in the Bookshop, and they've been hugely supportive from the start of the Cambridge series. And when I said I was bringing a book out, they said, well, let's have a launch party here. They only opened in July, so it's one of the first events they're doing. And that's on the 5th of December, as Alex says, from 6:30 in the evening. Tickets to the event are free. They can be obtained from the bookshop. But you do need to reserve a ticket because the bookshop isn't huge. So
yes,
we need to be able to control numbers, get me? Imagine there's going to be queues outside. But people need to let them know.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is turn up and then find out you could have got a ticket for free.
Yes, it is free. And there'll be, light refreshments and all of that.
And they, I suppose, they want to plan for that as well.
That's right. Yeah. Indeed.
Well, that sounds very exciting. Now, they say it's on the 5th of December.
That's a Thursday evening, 6:30.
Lovely. Yes. That was going to be my next question. And will you be reading bits from the book?
Yes, just a short reading. That's all, just to give people a flavour of where we're going with it. But yes, it's mostly just to come in, partly to introduce people to the bookshop if they've not been before, but also just to come. As I say, I've done 8 books before, and I've never been able to have a sort of a celebration like this. So I'm very
lovely.
Excited about
and
it, that.
And the website for Bodies in the Bookshop to get the if you can't get in before then,
yes,
I think it's just bodiesinthebookshop.co.uk.
That's it. Yes.
So, and it's /events. So that's really easy.
Yes.
So, well, I wish you all the luck for that.
Thank you.
It sounds brilliant. And you said you're going to be this is far in a series of 5. So have you mapped out the other ones already?
Yes, I've mapped out how I want the main character to develop, because there are things about him that we don't
yet
know.
George Hardman, is it?
Gregory Hardman.
Great.
Yes, there are things about him that are not yet known to the readers, and I know how I'm going to drip feed that, and I know the central crime for each of the 5, but the rest of it grows organically as I go. Characters come in that I wasn't expecting to be so important, and others that I thought would be central just sort of fade away. But yes, I've got the main crime, and I know where I'm going with Gregory, which is the important
bit. And so this is number 2, and we expect to see you back here sometime around this time next year.
I do hope so, yes.
For number
with Gregory 3.
Yeah.
That's the working title.
That's easy. Thank you very much, Susan.
Thank
good luck
you.
With it.
Cambridge 105 Radio.